This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This episode is brought to you by the Great American Magic Company, purveyors of fine magic. And you know, right now they're having what they are calling their biggest flash sale yet, which they are offering up to 50% off of thousands of items. So friends of the Magic Word are going to be able to get something extra on top of that. So it's a great deal and a great time. Now, if you're thinking about buying something from a magic online shop, well, now's the time to go over to thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com and checking it out and seeing what kind of great stuff that you can get. Not only will you be getting great deals and up to 50% off, as I said, over thousands of items, that if you are a friend of the Magic Word, you also will get an extra special gift. Good time to go and check it out, and also you will gain additional points so that you can get more free magic in the future. Pretty darn cool if you ask me. So thanks a lot, Eric, and thank all of you for going over and checking out the sponsor for the Magic Word. Well, this week on the podcast, we are going to pick up a little bit where we had left off a few weeks ago, and that is where we were at the Magic Castle out in Hollywood, California. And we spent a little bit of time one afternoon late in which we were talking with Sarah Ballantyne. Actually, her name is Saratoga Ballantyne. She goes by Sarah. And she is one of the daughters of the late Carl Ballantyne. And in this podcast, we get an opportunity to chat with her about her father and some of the activities that she's been involved with him and what it was like growing up in a house with someone who has become a legend. Actually, he was in his own lifetime as well. He was not only a great magician and funny magician, who, by the way, in Magic Magazine had identified him as being one of the top 10 funniest magicians ever. And then, but he also was a actor, not only in television and movies, but also in plays and elsewhere. I mean, he just was very versatile, very funny guy. Used to hang out at the Magic Castle a lot towards his later years when he had some time. But he lived until a ripe old age of 92. And his daughter, Sarah, gives us some great stories about what it was like in growing up in the household where not only that he was there, but other people who were celebrities of the day who would come by who were in the movies with him. And it was just kind of interesting, kind of what it must have been like, I guess, at that time, because it was just like Uncle Ernie. You know, Ernest Borgnine was like almost a godfather. You know, he was just a nice guy, you know, to her, and she always referred to him as such. But anyhow, you'll get to hear all of these stories and more, because she also has a documentary that she put together, that she was involved with, I should say, called Troopers, which is available on snagfilms.com, and you can go over there and check that out. Also, if you are listening to this podcast just through your phone or some other podcasting method and you didn't go to the magicwordpodcast.com, if you go to our website, there is a video link there that you can click on. You can watch this movie for free. It is about an hour and a half documentary, full-length documentary that is available there too. So you can enjoy watching this film. Enough of that. I think that you're going to be enjoying this. It was just a delightful conversation. I had not had an opportunity to meet Sarah before, and so I want to thank Trisha Lasky, who is the membership director at the Academy of Magical Arts, and she was the one who had put me in touch with Sarah, and we had a chance to sit down. Sarah also is on the board of directors for the Academy of Magical Arts, so that's why we met there in their office one evening, and I know you're going to enjoy it, so please welcome our guest this week, Saratoga Ballantyne, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And I'm here at the Magic Castle up in the offices above the kitchen, which used to be the former library here at the Magic Castle. And my guest today is someone who is related to what was billed as the world's greatest magician, I believe. And he was not only a great comedy magician, but also was one who has gone down in the annals of history. If you go into looking him up in IMDb, you can find all the movies he was in. I'm talking about Carl Ballantyne, who was a tremendously funny, funny man and a competent magician. But he made himself to be like one of the original bumbling kinds of magicians. He's very, very funny. And I am very, very
fortunate here this evening to share my microphone with his daughter, Ms.
Miss. Go ahead, say it.
Sarah Ballantyne. Hi there, Sarah.
Hi. I was fine. No, I'm fine. Oh, it's great meeting you and talking to you, and I'm so happy I got to see your act tonight. I wondered if my dad had ever seen your performance.
I don't think so. I had not had the chance. I think I actually did see it. Yeah, I take it back. I saw him perform at an IBM convention, and I don't remember which one that it was, and it was one of the last magic conventions I believe he had attended and had an opportunity to. He had a poster, and he signed a poster for me and everything. It might have been the Texas Association of Magicians. It may not have been the IBM. But
that's great.
Yeah, and he lived to be, what, about 92 or something?
About exactly 92.
Okay.
Which is a really good age to go, except I would have preferred 93.
Yeah, why 93?
Just to have another
year
with him.
Just to have another year with
him. That's all.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we really were very close. I adored my dad.
Now, how many people in your family?
Well, my mom died in 2000, so... People said to me, your dad's not going to last very long without your mom. And I'm like, you want to bet? And I started taking him everywhere with me like a golden retriever. I just put him in the car and go, Dad, we're going to the castle. We're going to the track. We're going here. And we just went all over, and he met people and made friends, and he lived 9 more years, which is great. But what did you exactly
ask?
Well, no.
I was just saying as far as the number of siblings that
you have. Oh, I just have a sister.
Just a sister, yeah.
We were both named after racetracks. I'm Saratoga, and she's Molly Caliente.
Molly, where's Molly? I assume that's in Mexico? Or?
Caliente is a track in Tijuana.
Okay.
And she was born during a heat wave, actually. And I was born in New York, upstate where Saratoga is. So
he was a big race...
Horse player. My dad had 3 main loves. He loved the horses, he loved cigars, and he loved magic.
And his family.
And he loved his family. Oh, no, he was a very good dad. He was a wonderful dad.
Yeah.
And he really encouraged me to do lots of things. And I wish I had learned magic, because he did start out as a straight magician.
Yeah.
And he always used to have a deck of cards in his hands, always, as I was a little girl.
Really?
And...
So he liked close-up magic, not just illusions and things.
Yeah, no. He started out, doing... He used the name Carl Sharp. So, to think of like Card Shark. He was Carl Sharp, and he did cards. And this, of course, way before I was born. But I know all about this, because my dad was in the tail end of vaudeville.
Yeah.
And one night, I guess a trick screwed up, and he improvised a line. And the club owner said, hey, that was pretty good. You should think about doing some more of that.
Yeah.
And pretty soon, he started incorporating more comedy lines. Before you know it, he was barely doing any magic. It was all like comedy bits around magic and making fun of magicians, which somehow endeared him to magicians. He was showing a certain kind of ego, and you know, it's not so prevalent today, actually, that kind of
where he kind of made fun of himself
and
of the art in a way, to be the bumbling magician that, like, darn, it should have worked, that who put that in there for me,
When I used to go to friends' houses, I'd say, where's your daddy's cards? And they'd be like, what do you mean? I go, well, doesn't he have any cards? Like, I just thought everybody's father had cards in their hands all the time.
Of course they do.
And one time we were in a candy store, and I watched my father take some gum and some other things and put it in his pocket. And we got outside, and I was like 6. I said, Daddy, what are you doing? You didn't pay for that. He said, I'm practicing.
Well, he was getting very good at it, it sounds, as well.
Apparently.
So he was in vaudeville. For some reason, of course...
He caught the tail end of vaudeville.
Okay.
He died in 2009, but he was in vaudeville, I think, in the late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
I guess vaudeville died out by 45. That was pretty over by then.
That'd be about right.
He was performing in the big theaters in New York on Broadway that were vaudeville houses.
Who were some of the people he worked with?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is so great. And I would try to get him to talk about this,
know.
And he was like, I don't care about the past. I care about tomorrow. What am I doing next? And I'm like, what? When did you work with Ella Fitzgerald, Dad? These names and the people, Patti Page, a lot of performers.
Did you have people come to the house from time to time like that?
Sure. We used to have these big, big parties. When my dad got McHale's Navy, well, first of all, I was born in New York, and we were living in New York City. My mother was a cabaret performer. She worked for have a sip.
That's right, time for a drinker.
Here, I'll talk. I'll keep talking. She worked for a guy named Julius Monk at the upstairs at the downstairs club. And so she was like in the New York cabaret scene. My dad was doing magic. And he gets a call for a screen test for this TV show. And he really hadn't done much acting. He'd just done his comedy act. So they flew him to California. He did the screen test. They told him to wait. He rented an apartment. He kept being in touch with me and my mother because it was just us at that point. Mm-hmm. And she didn't want to give up the apartment and quit her job in the cabaret thing. And I was in school until he knew the show was going to go. So once the series was picked up, we moved to California by train. And we were living in an apartment.
Wow, that was a long ride.
I know. My mother would not fly. What can I tell you?
Oh, except never flew in her whole life.
No, she did fly. She hated it. And she did not want to subject me to it, who was ready to fly. I would have been great with it.
You were ready for it. Yeah.
But I did not want to leave New York. I was upset. Anyway.
You had a boyfriend or something back
then? No. Okay. I was just like, I liked my school. And I wanted to stay there. You know, I'm a Cancer. We don't move. We like to stay put. We're clinging like the crab.
Were you older, like, and going to some of the plays, and you just enjoyed the
downtown? No, I was very little. Oh. I was really a little girl, but I started going to Broadway shows when I was 3.
Okay.
I saw Gypsy, and I remember telling my mother, that's what I want to do when I grow up. And she said, you want to be an actress? I said, no, I want to be a stripper. I was a little Hellcat.
Yeah.
So anyway, we come
together. Has it changed?
No. I certainly don't. Now I want to put more on. So we move out here, and my mother said, well, if we're going to live in California, we have to have a house. Mm-hmm. So we bought a house, and it was very big, and we had all kinds of people stay with us that were passing through town. Like when Estelle Parsons got Bonnie and Clyde, she stayed with us. And when Eileen Brennan got The Last Picture Show, she stayed with us. And we'd have parties with, like, Christopher Plummer, and just everybody would pass through because we had so much room.
Right.
And it was a really great time. It was a really, Ernest Borgnine, of course, and my father was his best man at one of the weddings, not the Ethel Merman one that lasted a day, but the next one, the one to Donna, before Tova, who he was with till he died. Okay. But all that crew, you know, Tim Conway and all those people, such a
What was Ernest Borgnine like?
He was great. He was such a gregarious, fun person. Uh-huh. And I think we were having the house painted, and he came over and wanted to help the guys, and they were, you know, slapping paint on the front of the house, but like drunk on beer. We just bought this big house in Hollywood, and they were totally cocking it up. It was very fun. And he took us to all the Italian restaurants, and they all knew him. Mm-hmm. So we used to go to Dantana's, which still exists. It's one of my favorites today. You should go
there.
Is that
a steakhouse?
It's Italian, but yeah, they have great steaks. Okay. I mean, really.
I love Italian. It's one of my favorite.
Oh, how long are you here for?
I'm going to be leaving next Monday, so I can have lunch.
Yeah. If you want to. I mean, it's totally worth it. It's just, you've been to Musso Frank's,
Well,
right?
I was just about to say this afternoon that Trish gave me the address of Musso Frank's. They said it's supposed to be the place for martinis, and that's me. I'm going to go there Thursday, I think.
Do you gin or vodka?
Vodka.
Okay, well, I usually have gin, but that's okay. It's very good. And it's been there since 1919. I tend to go to all the old places. Mm-hmm. I'm attracted to the older. Dantana's was opened in 62.
Well, that's what I would like also, is just kind of the old Hollywood. I mean, when I first came here, I remember going to the Brown Derby.
Yeah.
Even. In fact, I took a menu that was, remember the Brown Derby had the menu on the outside, and I slipped one out, and I've got a copy. I've got the original one of the menu somewhere.
Did you ever have the grapefruit cake?
No, it didn't ring a bell. No.
That was like their most famous dessert. Okay. It was like a not sweet cake.
Okay.
I mean, you probably had orange cake and lemon cake.
Yeah.
Grapefruit cake. And you can still get it downtown at the market. Somebody down there makes it, the exact recipe, if you crave it. But you don't know it, so you won't miss it.
Is there some place called Christopher's or something like that downtown also? There was another, or Nate Michaels. There was someone, I think on the Food Channel, I saw some restaurant that's been around like forever near downtown. It's like somebody's name like
okay,
that. Like
hold a Chris, on.
Maybe not.
No. Philippe's?
No, that didn't ring a bell. It might come to you later. I ask...
Taylor's?
No.
Taylor's Steakhouse?
Taylor's Steakhouse,
no.
Place. No. I have to ask John Armstrong. He was telling me about it then also. He'd worked a couple of shows there before anyhow. So you had some other people. It was interesting.
Clifton's.
I think that was it,
It's a cafeteria. It's a four-floor cafeteria with
had
a tiki bar.
Okay.
Yes, that must be it.
Is that a pretty cool place?
Very cool. It's been refurbished.
Started with a C. I had it right. Clifton's.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And John Armstrong probably would have performed there.
Okay.
And you're here right now for the Hollywood Fringe Festival. So there's like theater up the wazoo, down just not too many blocks away from here.
Did not know
and
that.
There's a bunch of magic stuff. I mean, but different, not just a magic show. It's more like theatrical, and there's music.
Yeah.
And one of our members, Chris Philpott, has directed.
Chris just was here last night. Came
in
with Chris,
a
longtime friend, and there are two guys from Italy, and they're going to be doing a show
That's
Saturday at 3, and he said, I'm going to invite you.
Okay. It's Go. Do not miss it.
Well, I'm planning on Saturday to see it.
Infinitesimo. It's fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, they came and they enjoyed the show last night, and they said, hey, they want to. Yeah.
Is that guy tall?
Chris?
No, Chris.
No, I mean the two Italian guys. Not as tall as Chris. Yeah. I would say no. They're, I think, average height. Probably about 5'10" or 11". Something like. One guy is shorter than the other one.
Can't tell on stage. You know, you really can't tell. I love the theater. No. You can't tell how old anyone is, how tall they are. You cannot beat it with a stick, as far as I'm concerned.
So you said you had all these celebrities who we now know as being old Hollywood kind of come and go. So tell me some stories. I think it'd be kind of interesting. I mean, what happened with somebody?
We're going back in time. Yeah. It's just the whole world of, I ended up making a documentary film called Troopers about actors over 80 and 90 who are still pursuing their showbiz dream. I made a film with Dale Lawrence, my dear friend, and we were able to interview all of these incredible character actors, some more famous than others. And it was just a smattering of people that were just friends of my parents, basically. We had Kay Ballard in it, and Pat Carroll was in it, I don't know if you know all these people. Alan Rich, character actors, not so much stars,
yes,
you know.
Right. But people, if you see their face, I remember seeing him someplace. And yeah.
Harold Gould. Anyway, it took us a long time to make the movie. Betty Garrett's in it. Oh, she's so fantastic. Mm. It's just the people that we thought were friends, but that also were amazingly talented. And just many stories.
Who was one of your dad's best friends?
Well, one of my dad's best friends was a guy named Joe. And Joe was not an actor.
Okay.
He called him Stosh because he was Polish and he was a writer. And he had been a stuntman and had been on many, many, many movie sets. He stood in for Frank Sinatra and he had great stories. Okay. Joe used to have amazing stories. But he kind of disappeared, like, you know, around the time my dad died. There were certain people that we were close to.
They were part of that circle that...
And he was, I would say, a really good friend. I mean, my dad would go to lunch with Carl Reiner or, you know, he had a whole coterie of showbiz people. But then he really was a real guy, too. He loved to go to the racetrack. You know, near the end of his life, he hung out with AJ. You know, AJ?
I do.
Yeah, they would go to the track a lot. And
AJ wrote the book on schmoozing.
Correct.
He was the original Ronald McDonald.
Absolutely. Yeah. What a great story that is.
Yeah.
And he was just a lovely guy. And he was very impressed that we had a medical marijuana card and a plant growing in the yard that he liked.
Legally.
Well, my father, believe it or not, I know he seemed very Jewish, he was a Christian Scientist.
Okay.
And my mother was a Christian Scientist. And this prompted me to write the one joke I've ever written in my life. What do you call an old Christian Scientist?
Dead.
Lucky.
Oh.
Funny, ain't it?
Okay.
So, you know, my mother died in 2000, and I said, Dad, you're going to a frickin' doctor. I said, I want you to get checked out, because I want to know what we're dealing with here.
Sure.
And I dragged him, and he was in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. But around 90, he had to have a pacemaker, and he was not doing as well, and he wouldn't take medicine. Mm-hmm. So I got him a medical marijuana card.
What did he finally die of?
This is a great story. My father would always say, when I'd say, Daddy, how did he die? He'd say, he stopped breathing.
That's a good one.
That was it. That was the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, basically, I was with him.
I can see why he hung out with Carl Reiner. I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing he would say.
Very funny. Very funny, guys. I would.
And Mel Brooks, I guess, too.
Yeah, Mel Brooks, too. And he had a lot of writers. He hung out with more comedy writers than performers, because there is always that unspoken competition, I think. Carl Reiner professed to know every word of my father's act, which you would think would be flattering, but my father did not really find that flattering.
Okay.
You know, it's like, why would he spend his time doing that? Write a picture. Yeah. Put me in it. Billy Crystal was very fun. My father put him in a bunch of movies, put him in My Giant and Mr. Saturday Night and some other stuff, and we love Billy. My dad did a movie with Elvis Presley, did Speedway, and Elvis tried to give us a Cadillac, and My mother said, well, we don't need a Cadillac, dear. We have a Mercedes. I'm like, oh, who's, there's a little, oh, how cute. There's a little puppy
have
passing
a little puppy?
Through. A magic okay. puppy. Mm-hmm. Okay. Going, that is adorable.
Yeah. So he was in all of those movies, you said, as well. Now, I've heard that that writers are not necessarily as funny because they're so serious about writing the lines,
yes.
making sure, as opposed to someone they're writing it for,
yes.
you know, are more happy-go-lucky. So like, hey, write me some lines, you know. So they seem to be more fun than a writer would be.
That's true. Writers are a little more serious because it really goes more into the page and what they're doing.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of pressure on it, too.
The conversation isn't always so spirited. Mm-hmm. My father was naturally funny. It was just a funny household. And my mother was funny. My mother, by the way, was my dad's second wife.
Okay.
He had been married before to a showgirl named June. Mm-hmm. And I never knew her or anything. And she died, apparently. But it took my mother 5 years to get him to marry her because he had been so burned by the first wife.
Uh-huh.
They were married till she died. So it was a really good...
Did they marry in New York?
Yeah, they eloped.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They eloped, okay.
They did. I thought that was so romantic. Well, my mother was working and my father was working.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing a club act down in the village where she sang funny songs and she was apparently quite funny. I didn't get to see her do her act, but I've seen her do stuff.
Now, were
on.
Comedy clubs prevalent back then at all?
Well, it wasn't so much comedy clubs. It was the cabaret scene.
Okay.
It was very sophisticated uh-huh. nightclub.
I was thinking about Lenny Bruce as being a...
Yes, yeah. Right. No, my mother wouldn't have played where Lenny was, and my dad either. Mm-hmm. But like the upstairs at the downstairs club, the Rubon Blue, the Blue Angel, these wouldn't be names you know.
You've
heard of them.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So they were like, you know, where Joan Rivers got her start and where Madeline Kahn got her start. And... certain people that became famous, George Carlin, I think, and who became famous later.
Yeah.
So there were these cabaret shows, and the Kennedys would come, and Noel Coward, and Gertrude Lawrence, and, you know, it was the chic place to go for entertainment. Those places have disappeared. There's nothing like
yes,
that
right.
in New York.
Nothing, no.
But they've been taken over by the comedy clubs. That's mm-hmm. sort of what... But my dad never worked those clubs. He was more... He'd be the magician... The comedy magician on a show of magicians.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. Yes. Well, like I said, at a convention where there were other magicians over there, he was the perfect act because it'd be adding a little bit of levity, whereas everyone was most serious with their doves and everything else, and he would...
Right,
yeah,
right.
Well,
his greatest thrill, I mean, my father did not have a big ego, and he did not really feel like... But he loved that magicians so adored what he did and were so appreciative of mm-hmm. the kind of humor he was able to do. And that's just, you know, fluke, because...
Now, was he ever in the military? Of course, being in McHale's Navy, I always thought of him as perhaps being with the USO shows or that he had entertained the troops because he was with the troops, but he never actually was in the military?
No, he entertained because he had a bad back, so he couldn't fight.
Oh, okay.
And my dad was really tall
yeah.
up until the last few years.
How tall was he?
He was
like about
6'4",
okay.
And he had a bad back, and he couldn't even drive a car. He mm-hmm. would throw his back out constantly, so he finally gave up driving. He just had back trouble. And... No, he didn't serve in the military because of that.
But he always had this passion for magic, and he always did magic. And so did he do, like, sleight of hand? I mean, when he came here, did he know Di Vernon and all the guys here
yeah.
and all that?
No, I have pictures of him with everybody. Charlie Miller and Di
yeah.
Vernon, all the early guys.
Larry yeah. Jennings, Bruce Servan, and Peter Pitt. And, yeah.
Really, it was Bill and Irene that got my dad to join the club, and because he was friends with them from, I guess, magic conventions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came out to do McHale's Navy, that was the club had been around, I guess, for a year. He is member number 338, and I did not realize the importance of inheriting that number. But
so as a daughter, you keep the family number then?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, actually, he made me a member in 1988.
Okay.
So I had my own card with that number on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful. And I'm so grateful, actually, to the Academy of Magical Arts in general because my dad loved it here. And I get to meet people who knew him well
sure.
and tell me stories I would never know.
Yeah, because they did something with him apart from you, and then they said, well, you know, I remember doing something with your dad, and you're going, he did what?
Yeah, exactly.
Like what? Tell me a story.
Well, I was here one night, and this guy was telling me about, they were at a magic convention in San Diego, and my dad bought him a hamburger, and they spent the whole evening, and he taught him something. I don't know exactly what, but he loved being able to come to this club, and just, he'd come by himself. After my mother died, this became like his home away from home. And he just had friends, and he'd have dinner, and he'd go see shows, and people would ask him tips, and he'd say, you know, it'd be a lot funnier if you dropped it here. Or, you know, he'd give them, like, tips.
Sure.
Not to
kind
direct
of a critique.
Them.
Yeah.
But no, not like, you know, he was never negative. My father, amazingly never negative. And when I'd say, so, Daddy, what did you think of that guy's act? He'd say, the worst thing he could ever say, that guy thinks he's doing real magic. And it just meant the ego was stronger than the work. And but he never knocked anybody because he had such respect and admiration for the art and the craft and what people did. And you know.
But did he ever feel that he was not accepted as a magician because he was doing these spoofs as opposed to doing the sleight of hand?
He never took himself very seriously either. So, you know, if you didn't take him seriously as a magician and you were laughing, he didn't care.
Right.
And as Jack Goldfinger says, if the check clears, the act was good.
That's what Walter Blaney told me years ago, that, you know, I'd say, well, you know, I did the show and I wasn't really happy. And he said, well, did they pay? And I said, yep. So then
it was fine. I know. I try to think that way, too, because I'm also pretty hard on myself. I go, well, did they pay you, Sarah? Just be quiet.
So you say that he did not teach you magic, which is what
I
regret.
Well, he didn't teach me because I didn't want to learn it. Yeah, he wanted to teach me. I'm an idiot. Let's just put that out in the airwaves. Daddy, I have to go to my ballet lesson. Daddy, I have tap class today. Is that a cat? No, that's a dog. Good Lord. Daddy, I have my acting class. We're doing Shakespeare. I mean, I should have learned a few freaking card tricks, I have to tell you. So I believe that I will now, at this late stage in life, before the last curtain goes down, I will learn some magic. I feel I must.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And when you do, you're going to learn some sleight of hand. I mean, your dad did
a lot. I'll start with sleight of hand. Okay. Well, I'm not going to get, you know, cut myself in half. I mean, I'm not getting illusions made by John Gaughan or anything.
Yeah.
We'll just start simple. Card tricks, maybe coins, a few cups. Right. A few balls, you know, something.
Try some mentalism or mind reading or something
like that. Oh, I was just thinking of that. Maybe it's working already. You know, just maybe a rope trick. Yeah, just simple.
So. Now, how many years was he with McHale's Navy? Wasn't it like 9 years or
no,
something?
No, no, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was only 4 years.
Is that
but
right?
It's
okay.
been in reruns
that
forever.
Must be,
and so sometimes people will call me up and say, hey, your dad's on TV right now. And I'll be like, I saw that show 27 years ago. I'm asleep. But they have these channels that run old shows. I think it's Me Network.
Right.
They show it sometimes.
Now, did you ever go down to the studio then? Or?
Of course.
And?
Of course I did.
What
it
was
super
like?
Fun. Well,
I mean, they say, you know, silence on the set and whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you're probably playing around. They say, cut, just a minute. This little girl needs to make too much noise.
I got my SAG card when I was 9.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I was a serious actress. You did not understand.
Were you in any of the shows?
Well, no, not McHale's Navy. But, okay, my mother would drop my father off at the back lot for where Teratupa was, which is the island where the boat was and where they shot. And I was driven over here. I was on a show called The John Forsythe Show, which was a series that John Forsythe had after Bachelor Father and before Charlie's Angels. He ran a girls' school, and Elsa Lanchester was the head of the drama department, and I was a little girl in the show who wanted to be an actress.
Okay.
So I was always doing like scenes and stuff in the show. So my
As a regular and not...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So my mother would drop us both off at the studio. But then there was... I brought my whole Girl Scout troop to the McHale's Navy set.
I bet they thought that was great.
Yeah, they used to have a tram. I guess now they must float through the air there. I don't know what they
do. Ask for Babs.
Yeah, something amazing. So they had a tram, and they took us on a tram, and there's the whole troop waving, and the guys are all there, and they got autographs, and it was great. It was really cute.
Yeah.
So I was very popular, except for the ones who thought I was a snob because my father was on a TV show. But I didn't think anything. I just figure everybody's father's on a TV show. You know, it's weird when kids don't get that what they're experiencing is different from what anybody else is. I didn't have a sense of special or unusual. I thought this is what everybody did.
I have received just a very small part of that. When I lived in Midland, Texas, which is a smaller town, you know, a city of less than 100,000 people, when I was there in the 80s, and I taught a magic class, and I started doing a lot of magic, and as a result, I was on television frequently. I was on the newspaper. I was on the radio, and because I taught classes, I had a lot of people who knew me then as well, and George W. Bush was at that time a friend of mine, and still is, but he was a my assistant, actually, and helped me with certain things. And he used to come over to the house and practice, you know, certain things. I'd make him float and pull his shirt off his back and things like that. We'd rehearse. But the point is that my older son at the time, who was only about 7, I guess, one time said to me, "Well, Dad, is your job okay?" And I said, "What do you mean my job?" And he said, "Well, I haven't seen you on TV or seen your picture in the newspaper for a while, so I figured, you know, that things not going well for you." Because he thought, because that was not my full-time profession. I was in the natural gas business. I was in the energy business. And so this was what I was doing, but he saw me and perceived me as being this local celebrity type of a guy. And so, you know, as a child of a celebrity, he knew nothing else, you know, and didn't know what I did during the daytime, just saw the things that the general public sees. The same thing that the general public of your friends and the Girl Scouts and everything would see your dad on these shows. And so therefore, and you would also, thinking that, well, everybody else's dad should have the same thing. And so he kind of assumed everyone else's.
Oh.
So he thought, you know, that my dad is on in the newspaper and on television. I guess my friend should be as well. And so it's a different perspective, you
know. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It is interesting.
Now, whenever that he was went from the McHale's Navy, you said that he had other movies and kinds of things that he did. Did he ever do magic in any of the movies or the
yes.
McHale's?
Well, here's a little controversial tidbit. My father was called by Bill Cosby to do an episode of his show because he was his favorite magician. And so they actually wrote an episode so my dad could do his act on the show.
Was it like a birthday party or something for the kids at this house?
Did you ever see this?
No, but I could imagine.
That's interesting because there's all these kids sitting around and Bill Cosby's at the end of the row.
Dr. Cosby, yeah.
Laughing, clapping, hysterical, and the kids are like,
not getting it. It's like they're nothing. Yeah.
And the day of the mistrial, which I thought was just absurd.
Yeah.
They were showing that episode.
Really?
Yes, on some rerun channel because all these people wrote me that day, mm-hmm. and I said, "Look, you know, my dad never took any pills. They never had a night out.
About whatever that was going on.
You know, they just, it was just a job and he was out of there." So I'm not sure.
So Bill Cosby never came by your house.
No. Harry Anderson had them write a night court so my dad could be on it. If you go down the exhibit, I think I have that clip in the video, in the display.
Tell me about that now. That was, I kind of interrupted earlier. I said, you know, hold this story until afterward. We were off mic before that the podcast began, that you were starting to talk about something that is downstairs and that was one of the pictures or something.
Well, Joe Furlow asked me about a year ago if I would like to have, there was a wonderful display at the Skirball Museum, Houdini and Jews in Magic.
Correct.
And so there was, at the end of that exhibit, my father's stuff. And there was a little TV on a loop running his Ed Sullivan shows and a bunch of TV shows doing his magic and an exhibit. So that was up for a couple years. It was wonderful. It was marvelous. It was all packed up and sent back to my house where it has been until Joe Furlow said, "We're thinking of filling the display cases down in the inner circle. Would you like to have some of your father's props displayed?" And I thought, oh, this is wonderful because then it can get out of the house for a while and I'll have a little more room because I do live, I mean, as my boyfriend Curtis said, "Honey, it looks like a princess trunk exploded in a magic shop between my clothes and furs and magic and feathers and, you know, I have a thing that flowers and, I have all this stuff because I'm a Cancer. We don't get rid of anything." And anyway, and I love it all. I do love it. But now it's nicely cased down in the inner circle at the Academy of Magical Arts. And there's a wonderful display of my dad in a tuxedo that was his real tuxedo, and there's his props and the rope and the basket and the sign and all the stuff. But on the floor is this telegram from Billy Rose that is just a vituperative, nasty telegram where he berates my father for some sort of language he used in a show in one of his theaters, saying, if you ever use that language again, I will see to it that you will never work again. Billy Rose, 1945, some theater. Well, my father died in 2009. I found that telegram in 2011. So I have no idea what it was he said, what it was he did, and I'm hoping by having it in the case,
someone
may walk by and go, I remember that show. He said this. Yeah. And I would love to know. It's kind of like my rosebud. Oh. I have no idea what the heck it means.
From Citizen Kane. Yeah. Huh, that's interesting. Now, is that where the Cardini exhibit was downstairs?
The Cardini exhibit is fabulous. That's closer to the library. That's still there.
Okay.
That's going to be there, I think, maybe forever, because Randy Pitchford, who's one of our members, mm-hmm. Is he Cardini's nephew? Oh, is he?
He is.
Yeah. So
I did a podcast with him.
Oh, Randy, okay. Yeah. Fantastic.
Because he lives up near Dallas.
Yeah, right. And
my neck of the woods.
He's starting a theater in his house. You can probably
Peacock Theater.
Yeah. You can perform there.
Yep, I've talked to him about that.
Oh, perfect. Excellent. So the Ballantine display is more towards the bar. Like when you come down to the inner circle, you'll see there's a Larson family exhibit in a case, and then Johnny Carson, and then something else. And then when you get to the bar, Ballantine's right there. Okay. And there's a video loop.
Because on the other side is where the W.C. Fields thing is, and they got a loop over there. Then.
Correct, which is great. I love that, too. I mean, I come here at least once a week, sometimes way more. Like last week, I was here four times. And it's just like heaven to be able to be a member of this club and share this world, and it just helps me enjoy magic and know that that was a gift I got from my father.
Right, because it is like a home away from home for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the only reason I'm on the board of directors here, I believe, is because Irene Larson asked me to run. Mm-hmm. And at first I said no, and then I realized, you can't say no to Irene Larson. It is not done.
She's such a wonderful lady.
And I did not expect to win.
Yeah.
So it was such an honor to be elected. And now I'm finishing my last term on the board. And I can just go back to enjoying the club as a civilian.
Now, as far as the terms go, what are the requirements or laws on that? I mean, can you serve again, or you term out?
You term out. You can serve three terms. And they're two-year terms on the board of directors. So this is my last term. I've done.
But they vote every 2 years.
Every 2 years. Yeah, okay. I can sit. Yeah. So optimistic. Trisha Lasky just said I could sit out and then one term and then run again. Well, we'll see about that. I know some people do it. It becomes habit forming because, you know, we so love the club and we want it to endure. And everybody has such great ideas about how to bring more revenue and more attention. And so magicians have a mecca.
Has been a lot of revitalization, and I'd say that Joe Furlow certainly has a lot
has
to do with it.
He's done an amazing job, and I'm so lucky to have served on the board while he's been our general manager, because it's just been such a synergistic rise every year. We're all just...
Who else is on the board?
Well, Randy Sinnott is our president. He's downstairs. Mike Elizalde. I don't know if you've met him. Brian Tolman, who's been on the board with terms out longer than any other person, I believe, in the club. I think he's been a board member off and on for 12 years or something like that. Kathy Haight is a new associate member on the board. She's an attorney, very, very bright. John Gaughan is on the board. And Jim Steinmeier.
Yeah. Well, so, I saw Jim here last night. So
And he was at Incantesimo when I saw it, the show that Chris Philpott directed. And he was there with his wife. Yeah, so it's a pretty good board.
I should say.
It's a pretty strong
And, of course,
board.
The president is?
Randy Sinnott is our president. Okay. So it's four magician members, three associates. So it keeps a balance.
And that's for the Academy of Magical Arts, not the Magic Castle.
No, the Magic Castle doesn't have a board. The Academy of Magical Arts has a board. And they have a board of trustees also.
And was Randy the one that's got... I saw a pin tonight that someone was wearing had diamonds around it.
That was probably him.
Okay.
It had diamonds around it.
I'd never seen him before.
Well, how lovely. It's a fancy pin.
Yes, it was. Very fancy.
It's passed down from one president to the next.
It's like the president pin.
So Erica Larson put it on him.
Oh.
So Erica gave it to him. Okay, gotcha. Okay. So, again, with Carl Ballantine, he'd received a lot of awards and everything over the years. What would you say was something that really meant a lot to him?
I think, he got the Lifetime Achievement What did he get? What fellowship did he get from Lifetime Achievement? Steve Martin presented him with that. Mm. And ironically, that was the 1 year I was out of town doing a play, and I was not at that awards ceremony. I can't even believe it. But I he was very proud of that, of course. And going to the Inner Circle, the Magic Circle in London gave him an award, and that meant a lot to him.
And so he traveled over to London for that as well?
Well, unfortunately, he wasn't able to travel when they were going to present it to him. He had That's when he started having the heart trouble, mm-hmm. So they told him not to fly. So he
did it by Skype or something? Or
well,
you have
no,
a video
it was
or?
Sent to him. I think he sent Steve Dacherty and his wife over there. And
there's another guy who passed early.
I know. I believe that's how he got it, was through Steve. Mm-hmm. My father sent Steve there to get it. So that's how that happened.
I had worked with Steve one time when I was working the close-up room so many years ago. And
when was the last time you worked here?
Well, I was here in 12, 13, and 14. It was 13, 14, and 15, and then I skipped last year, 16, this year. But my first time was when I asked Bill Larson if I could come out. It's kind of a long story, and I've recounted, I think, a time or two on the podcast.
I'll have to research.
But because I had sent him a video tape back then, because I said, I don't want to come all the way out from Texas just to see about, giving you an audition to see if I can actually perform. And he said, well, I'll accept a video. And so I sent one. 2 months passed. I didn't hear from him. I called him, and he said, let's wait. Because I had written a couple of articles for Genie Magazine that he was, I was a journalist, and so was publishing. He wasn't going to be going to the IBM convention, so he was asking for someone to write that up for Genie. And so I wrote him and said, I'll be glad to. And so he said, that's fine. Then later I wrote up the TAOM and a few other things. So I had several things published in Genie. And so he knew me. And so when I called and asked about this, then he said, well, send me a video. So that's how that kind of, because they weren't accepting videos.
Oh.
And so then I called again a couple months, and he said, it's on my desk. I promise I'll look at it. And I never heard. 2 months passed. And so I called again, and I said, don't want to bug you. And he said, oh, sorry. No, I haven't. That's fine. He said, why don't you come on out? He said, why don't you come out in October? We have a great Halloween time, and you'll love it. And I said, Halloween's big for me also. And I said, let's do it earlier in the month. And so that was fine. So that was the first time I came out, like in 1981. And you know what I remember was kind of fun later. I had worked the parlor, and Glenn Ford was there with his wife, and I believe his daughter and son-in-law. But what was interesting, I think they were the only four English-speaking people in the audience. The rest were all Asian, and traditional, like in kimonos and things. And so they didn't understand. And you're not supposed to necessarily ask the celebrities for their help to come up. And and so I tried not to pick on them, but it's like, how do you avoid that then necessarily? So that was the thing. And so I came then, I think in 81, then again like in 87, then again in 94, and then I think 2003 or something. And then it's just that I had another job that I was working, didn't have the time. And so then after I pursued magic on a full-time basis, I had more time to go after it.
I
contacted Jack and say, hey, I want to come back each year,
Great.
And so I love it. And I love it whenever that I come here, and Jack and Trish always say, hey, welcome home, and just
what
I feel
room
good.
Are you staying in?
The Don Lawton suite.
You're in the Don Lawton suite. All right. That's great.
I have always stayed. Each time they've had me back over here, in the early days, you just kind of stayed wherever, and they fed you with a slingshot in the corner or something, But now it's so much nicer, and you got your own butler and everything. It's just so nice. But, I remember it because Don Lawton was my MC in the room in the close-up. And I remember one of the funny things, too, when my wife was standing next to the fireplace, and that Don had come over. I think it was, might have been Billy McComb, now I think about it, who had said, darling, if you're warming that up for me, I like my medium rare,
That's so funny.
But Don was a very nice guy, and the fact that I'm from Illinois, and he was living in Belleville, I believe, or, in East St. Louis or St. Louis area, so I did not know him at the time, but I used to get the lines from Lawton from him,
and
I've spoken to Joan, several times, a lovely, lovely lady, and I've got a copy of the book that she kind of put together.
I was going to ask you, do you have the autograph book?
Yep.
Yeah,
I do.
Isn't that great?
Yep.
I was with my dad when Joan was interviewing him for the book, and my father used to have really, really good handwriting, but as he got older, it got kind of funny. Like, it was still clear, you could read it, but it really changed. And the analysis of it, I thought, was fascinating. I think that is a really interesting art, that art of handwriting analysis. Yeah. And it was great that she did that book.
Yeah, that was a completely different book than any kind of magic book that I'd really kind of seen then before. Well, you said that you did a documentary then?
I did. I'll put a big pitch in for it. I mean, it's called Troopers, and it's spelled T-R-O-U-P-E-R-S. And you can see it for free at snagfilms.com, like snag your stocking. Okay. And it's really entertaining. It's 90 minutes. It's a full-length documentary. But it's about these 12 showbiz veterans and how they hung in there their entire lives in show business into their 80s and 90s, still auditioning, still doing it. And it's a really inspiring documentary for people who aren't even in show business about enjoying what you do, and that makes life.
And who were some of the people who were in there?
Well, let's see. I'm going to try to name the whole cast, and I'll do it in order. The first person we interviewed was named Justine Johnson, and she had been on Broadway since she was 17. The second person we interviewed was a guy named Carl Ballantyne, who really didn't want to be bothered. He just wanted to go go to lunch, but we made him talk. The third person was Bruce Kirby, wonderful character actor. Then Betty Garrett, who you know probably from On the Town and a lot of movie and musicals. Kay Ballard, Pat Carroll, Harold Gould, Alan Rich, Marvin Kaplan, incredible character actor. He was on a series called Alice, but he was in It's a Mad World. He wore glasses. He had a he was the star of a cartoon called Top Cat.
That's my favorite show.
Okay.
Call him TC.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he wasn't the lead cat. He was the best friend.
But he was the voice.
He was the voice of that.
Is that Benny?
Yes, he was the voice of Benny.
Yeah, I remember.
Marvin just passed away. It was very sad. I mean, all of these people. And Ivy Bethune, who just turned, I think, 100. And Connie Sawyer. Oh, thank you. Who's now 104. We're on the IMDb. And it's really just a fantastic, Jane Keane, who was Trixie on The Honeymooners.
Yeah.
Just a fantastic.
And these were all what you call troopers. Yeah.
We're calling them troopers because
did you ask them the same questions or did you just ask about their lives?
Well, this is what we did. I did it with a partner. We wrote up a series of questions. But what ultimately happened was we stopped asking because we found it much better as filmmakers to just let them talk.
Sure.
And we shot about 27 hours of film to get our hour and a half movie. It was just going to be a short, but we realized it couldn't just be a short, so we had to raise money and get more money, and it took years to edit it. And we realized we could have told many stories. Making a documentary is like life. You can choose what you want to put in it.
Sure.
You know, we could have told a very downer story about the jobs they didn't get, the agents that screwed them over, you know, the negative stuff. But we chose to center on the more positive aspects of the business because we thought that's what would be the most benefit to people.
Sure.
And, man, you know, parental disapproval, the blacklist, the depression.
Well, that was interesting about the blacklist.
You know, Betty Garrett's husband was Larry Parks, who was going to be the biggest star ever in movies, the Jolson story and Jolson Rides Again, not Jolson Rides Again, Jolson Sings Again, and all these wonderful acting roles, and his career was just stopped.
It's one of those things you got to wonder about what our landscape would have looked like had there not been a blacklist, just like you wonder what our lives would have benefited from had there not been the Holocaust. You know, cancer could have been eradicated. So many things that happened, you know, that if these horrible things that happened, I mean, I'm not comparing the blacklist to the Holocaust by any means, but I'm just saying there are certain things that have happened that have affected, AIDS, whatever, that a lot of people have died that shouldn't have, that had so much to contribute, you know?
Yes, well, that's a very interesting theory, or just a thought to think about. I mean, it's true. So many stories that, or lives that didn't get to be lived.
That are lost, yeah. That we could have benefited and had a much more richer
knowledge.
Life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why I like the Skirball. You know, you're talking about the Skirball Museum, which
yes.
is a Jewish museum, and I've been there a time or two, and it's important, I think.
They let you in and everything.
Yeah, okay. that's right. And I'm an ordained preacher, in fact.
So. Are you really? Yeah, so, oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Can you marry people?
I can, and I do.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Let's see. So we talked about then the movie, and was that something that you had done because you had a passion for doing it, or were you looking at it from a profit?
No, it was strict. No, profit, documentary, those words don't even go together. No, it was strictly a passion. I mean, it was the labor of love from beginning to end. I had been doing a sketch comedy act with this girl, Daya Lawrence, who's a wonderful actress and very successful mogul over at The Variety. Mm-hmm. And we were doing these sketch comedy shows. We were called the White House Chicks. And we started out being Tipper and Hillary, so to give you an idea of the years.
Yeah.
And then it just branched off into kind of feminist humor. Uh-huh. And we started writing and doing shows and la la la. And we'd produce it ourselves, and we'd do it anywhere, a kiosk,
Wherever.
Whenever
that you'd open the refrigerator, the light would come on, you'd do 10 minutes.
Do 10 minutes. Yeah. So finally we decided, let's do something easy. Let's do something, you know, less stressful, where we have to get an audience and a theater and have props and lights. Why don't we let's make a little short film, like a little 10-minute, 12-minute film. So that's really how it started. I mean, we're just going to interview a couple people. But once we got into it, and, you know, we had so much fun doing it, and the people were so great. We even had to go back and shoot people more than once. Hmm. Connie Sawyer, one of our troopers, who's now, I believe, 104, and her credits go back to, you know, she was at the tail end of vaudeville. I think she knew my dad. Well, she was in vaudeville, and she's still going. The stories were just too rich and too great. Sometimes we'd have to go back again and get more. And we learned about lighting. So that maybe the first time some very beautiful woman like Jane Keane, we shot her terribly. We can't put this out into the world. She's a beautiful woman, and this is terrible lighting. So we'd go back and just tell her, you know, we didn't have the sound right, so we're going to reshoot. And then she'd be thrilled that we were there.
Yeah.
So, it was learning for us. But the editing is the if you're going to...
That's the key.
Editing is everything. That's what I think, because it can make a bad performer look good and a good performer look bad, depending how they cut it.
Well, George Lucas and his wife, apparently that was their passion, was editing. You know, directing was like a second thing.
Yeah.
There was the book that I'd read, Rudy Kobe had recommended, that was about Skywalker, Dancing Sky. I'd forgotten the name of the book, doggone it. But it was a phenomenal book. He'd recommended it, and it's an inspiring book then as well. But the point was, and what I was saying is that they both, you know, like to be in the editing room, and there's just quiet, and you were kind of looking at
the
and that's where
part.
It is.
That's where it's at, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's at.
So did you do any more documentaries after that?
I know, I'm still recovering from that one. It took us 7 years to do it, and I think we've made about $11.
I've talked with Marcy Hume about the movie that she did, you know, The Magicians.
Well, it's a wonderful movie.
Yes.
But then, of course, she had that unfortunate incident, right, with one of the magicians. Yeah. You know, that's just, what can you do? I mean, that's just...
Well, it's one of those things that... I think that at the end of the film that they should have said, you know, where they are now. And then kind of left that, and it's like, oh... That would have been kind of, and people would wonder, well, maybe there's another, and then there could have been a clamoring, perhaps, for the next film to find out what's going to be happening here.
Well, I've had lots of people say I should do a sequel to Troopers.
And are you thinking about it?
Well, if somebody would like to fund it, or I'm not going to do another...
Indiegogo or anything?
We did that to get the legal fees, because we have a lot of clips in the movie, and we had to get a lawyer, so that as a documentary, you can use clips and things and pictures, but you have to have this certain things in place so that you're not sued, and we needed to make an LLC and, you know, certain things you have to do.
Yeah.
So, she's busy. I'm not as busy. You know, she has a job every day. I don't. But I'd have to have a project that I'm really passionate about to put the time in again. And, maybe it'll come along.
There was a question, if it's not too personal, I want to ask, that has to do, again, back with the McHale's Navy and other kinds of things that, that your dad was involved with, that I'm sure there were royalties, you know, and sometimes that depends. I'm not asking what it was, but I've heard from some people who are actors are saying that, I did this, but I did it for scale, and after it was done, you know, I heard a podcast, and they were talking with Don Wells, who was on Gilligan's Island, and saying, I don't get anything. You know, if I go to Comic-Con or whatever, you know, I'll sign pictures, and that's about it, but I get nothing for this. Now, did your dad kind of do something smart?
He was very smart.
Good. Okay. That's probably all I need to ask.
Yeah, Dad was smart. Well, also, I think, maybe Gilligan's Island was it a little before McHale's Navy, or was it after? There were some SAG rules that changed. But, okay, so they were going to do a show in Vegas, an Elvis, a Cirque du Soleil show on Elvis. Was not a successful show. But I got a phone call because I have the rights. Well, not the rights. In the trust, I got my parents. My mother was an incredible actress, too. My mother has an IMDb page longer than my father's, quite honestly. But she wasn't a star. She was like a real character actress who did the neighbor, the teacher, the woman, but in everything, you know.
Freaky Friday.
That's a biggie. But I think there was some sort of change in SAG-AFTRA, but with how residuals were, because my mother did an episode of Hazel in 1964, and I just got a $50 residual for her, you know.
Just recently, because it replayed somewhere.
Somewhere, and, you know, I mean, I'm not leaving the country, a millionaire, yes, there's still, every year I get a big thing from Universal, NBC Universal, from McHale's Navy, and my dad, he did a bunch of cartoons and animated stuff, and he was on several other series after McHale's Navy. They weren't successful like McHale's Navy was. One was with Shirley Hemphill. Do you remember Shirley Hemphill?
No, didn't ring a bell.
I can't remember the name of the series. She ran a restaurant. It was a spinoff from another show. She had
Alice's Restaurant or Alice?
No, Alice. My mother did Alice, and Marvin Kaplan was on that. It was like a spin-off of What's Happening.
Okay.
And my dad played like, I don't know. I don't know what he played. That's the thing, you know, like I say, it was just the normal. He was, Daddy's going to work. Here's his lunch, you know, and I'd just go to my school or my whatever. I can't explain. It was just my mom and dad. That's what their job was.
Sure, their job.
That was their job.
Was there a job that he liked better than other? In other words, did he like McHale's Navy? Or is that just something he felt like that's a job, but I really like doing this one other little small thing that nobody watched? Or
that was his first series. His first TV show, I think, where he acted was Car 54, Where Are You? With Joey Ross and Fred Gwynne. And he even did magic on the Christmas episode. They did a Christmas show down at the precinct. And he did an act with his wife as his assistant. And then he did a few acting things, but nothing really big. I think one of the proudest things he ever did was Lycus in Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
It started.
Well, no, he wasn't
Zero
in
Mostel?
The movie.
Oh, okay.
No. He was at the Amundsen here in LA with Phil Silvers, and that production went to Broadway. And so, what year was that? That was in the late 60s, early 70s. And I think because he had auditioned for the original production with Zero on Broadway, and they said, no, Mr. Ballantyne, this isn't going to work. It's not a comedy part. And they gave it to John Carradine, who did it on Broadway originally. Yeah. Cut to, all these years later, they call him to audition again. He goes, they know me. Why don't they just hire me? But they wanted to hear him sing. So my mother worked him on a song from Paint Your Wagon. I still see Elisa, she keeps on returning, as breathless and young as ever. Anyway, my father was no singer, but he sang it. And he got the job. So after all those years, they decided, hey, why not make it a comedy part? And he did it, and he loved it. I know that was a really
happy. That was one of his favorites then.
I think he really enjoyed that. I mean, he liked everything he did. You cannot, well, unless the conditions were terrible and, you know, you were hungry or freezing or working too many hours, generally working is your joy. That's what you love.
He was happy and led a good life.
Yeah. Yeah, he enjoyed it.
Well, as we wrap up, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word.
Okay.
So my question then, Sarah, is what would be your magic word, perhaps one that you would glean from your father that he may have used? It's not necessarily, I don't mean like abracadabra or something like that. It could be a phrase, a sentence, you know, it could be a mantra, something that is important to you, you know, a slogan, something that you live by, a philosophy of life.
I have two actually that come right to my mind.
Good.
Because in the front of my date book, I still have a date book where I write things in it, not the phone. I write the beginning.
Like a day timer, you know, kind of, okay.
It's a week at a glance.
Sure.
And I write two things every year. Make the most of all that comes and the least of all that goes.
Wow, I like that.
It's one of my good ones that I really try to remember when shifting in life. Things come, they go, and don't make... Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the other one is, and it's an Indian phrase, and I wish I knew it the way they say it, but it's simply, if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got.
That makes sense. Yeah. No, you said it right. Yeah.
So... I guess those two. I guess that those would be my...
Well, that's a good way to close out. That's good.
Oh, I love
thank
that.
You.
Thank you so much. This was really great.
Well, Sarah, thank you for your time very
oh,
much. Quite
a
lovely.
Pleasure. It was so great to really meet you. I'm so happy I got to see your show. And,
well, thank you. And hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you. No, I did very much. Very much. Good. And I look forward to listening and listening, learning more about other people.
Yeah,
from
well,
your...
good. Well, thank you very much. And so again, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Sarah Ballantyne, and this is Scotty Out. What a delightful conversation, and what a wonderful lady. It was a lot of fun, and she, as you could tell, was just full of so much energy and vitality that we could have gone on speaking about other kinds of things. Certainly, she is a delightful conversationalist, and I enjoyed having an opportunity to meet Sarah, and again, I want to thank Tricia Lasky for getting me connected with her so we can present this podcast to you and let you learn a little bit more about one of the legends from our history of magic, that is Carl Ballantyne. And also, I want to thank Sarah for introducing me to yet another person who we will be hearing from in a future week coming up soon on the Magic Word Podcast. And that guest, it will remain a mystery for a little bit longer, but it's somebody I'm excited about coming up soon. Now it's time for a couple of reviews for products that are available from Murphy's Magic Supplies. First up is a product called the Full Monty by Liam Montier, and this was produced by Big Blind Media, and as I have proclaimed in the past, I am just a big fan of their production quality. It is a lot of fun. It's a very cool video. The production quality is very good. It's kind of interesting, in which they had filmed this. It looked like there was a little bit of traffic in the background. Kind of, it wasn't particularly distracting, I guess, but it's just something that was noticeable. But that aside, the content is stellar. Let me explain. This is another three-card Monty, kind of an effect, or I should say four-card Monty, but it's basically where you're trying to follow the queen. The cool thing I like about this, which, by the way, let me just say, it is a packet trick. Okay, let me just tell you the effect. You are showing these cards. You're showing a couple of cards, or three cards, that have or Joker written on the back of them, on let's say the red back of them, and then on the back of the other one it says Queen, which is an alternate color, let's say a green back card or something. And you can show that she is a queen and all the rest are jokers. You then put one of the jokers in your pocket and say, I'm going to make it even easier, so we just have the two jokers and the queen. And you kind of move them about. And as you're doing that, again, that you have printed on the back of these cards in big, bold letters, magic marker letters, not just a Sharpie. But anyhow, it will say joker, joker, and queen. Of course, then whenever that you finally turn them, you say, okay, well, where do you think a joker is? And they say, well, right there, because it says joker. And then you show the other cards, actually all say queen on the back of those cards. And what's kind of cool also is that when you turn the joker over that says joker on the back, on the face of it, it's, let's say, the ace of spades. And you show the other three cards that say queen now are all aces also. You leave those out. They can inspect it. There's nothing to see. They're ungimmicked. So, by the way, of different colored cards. I mean, that the other one's like purple and
blue or yellow or whatever. So it's kind of rainbow cards in the back that say Queen that you have printed on the back. So this is a walk-around type of a trick. I love the fact also it's resettable so that you can do it immediately at the next group. This is something that does not necessarily have to be done on a table, which I like as well because it can be done like in a cocktail party, strolling kind of environment. I like it from that aspect. Also, when you get the setup of the cards, you can put anything you really want on the back of them. I like that fact because you are selling these internationally, and so if you want to use other foreign languages on the back or you want to call them something else other than a queen, if you want to name the cards something rather than a queen, whatever. The point being is that you can customize these however you wish by writing whatever word in whatever language you want on the backs of these cards. Also, you essentially just get one gimmick card, a couple of gimmick cards, which you can then, you know, whenever that you put that away, it's very clean and it makes sense in the context of the presentation you're giving and why you do put the card away, leaving you with just the non-gimmick cards that are used throughout the rest of the presentation. Again, I like this very much on different levels. I always kind of like to have a little bit of a card mystery that is, you know, when you go to a table or you're performing, people expect you to be a con man. You know, when you're a magician, they say, oh, you know, you got to watch your wallets, you know, watch your watch or whatever. Say, oh, well, you're aware of the three-card Monty and that you've probably been fooled before, or perhaps you've seen these kinds of things done on the streets or in the back alley or someplace where you've heard about it. So this is something that gives you an opportunity to kind of show them a little bit of a trick and kind of letting them in on it. You know, instead of bending the corner and tossing the broads, as they say, that you have something that's written on the back. So how could you go wrong? Because it's actually written on the back and you've shown them the faces of the cards. Anyhow, it's a cool little trick, again, called the Full Monty. You get the cards as well as a DVD. So it's not an online link. It's a full-blown DVD that you would get that will give you all the instructions and everything that you need and the full routine. It explains also, one of the things I like is it goes through and explains how the trick is done with the explanation without going into the detail for the different moves that you would have to do. And then later, if you're not sure about how to do an Ascanio spread or a couple of things, then they do go into a more full length explanation of how these moves are done. And so this way that if you are an advanced card man, you won't have to watch the rest of it. You can just, okay, I got the point. I see how it's done without having to say, okay, this is a double lift and here's a, you know, single or double push off, etc. So well done. Good job, guys. And I recommend it. It's called the Full Monty. And that too is available from your favorite magic dealer through Murphy's Magic Supplies. Next up is a trick that was created by worldmagic.co.uk called Tactical. That's TACTIC-AL, Tactical. And the reason is they're going to be using a tic-tac box. There have been a lot of tricks out there with tic-tac boxes and several variations. Most recent one that I saw of Jay Sankey's was very clever with a signed coin inside there. And it was a free download that he was offering recently. And anyhow, this particular one, Tactical, is a fairly clever idea and very visual. The idea basically is that you're showing a tic-tac box and you toss it from one hand to the other. And when you do, it automatically changes into a box of cards. You take open the lid and take out a whole deck of cards from that. So it visually makes a change. Or you can have it so it looks like a small box, or that is a box of mini bikes or miniature bicycle cards. Same thing, you toss it in your other hand or you know, kind of move behind your back, and within a quick motion that suddenly changes to a full-size deck of cards. Open the lid and again pull out a full deck of cards. It is a visual thing. It's not knacky at all. In fact, it is easy. It's available, something that the beginner can do right out of the box. The couple of gimmicks that come with it, one is already ready to go, and the other one comes with the gimmicks that you need in order to make it, and it doesn't take, but as they say, just a few moments to make it, and you can. So it's very easy. I'm not wild about the showing, that is, of when you're showing the box, the way that you have to hold your hand and hold the, quote, box, whether it's the tic-tac box or the small deck of playing cards. It doesn't seem like a natural way of holding it, but again, you're not holding it for very long. You're just kind of quickly displaying that and then tossing it into the other hand, or revolving it around your arm or something so that it looks like that it just visually changed. Also, there is a little bit of black art involved, so it's not necessary that you would be wearing this against a dark-colored shirt or background, although that does add to the illusion. Also, I think if it's perhaps dark in the environment where you're working, if you're working a bar or something like that, then it might look a little bit better there as well. So it is kind of angly and kind of, I said, unnatural to kind of hold the thing. The video itself looks like it was filmed there at worldmagic.co.uk in their place. The quality of the film is such that it just looked like they had a microphone that was there picking up all the sound as they were talking, and you can hear the cars in the background outside the window. You can see kind of passing back and forth. Didn't think too much of it until they cut to another explanation, and as they were doing that, it was in a more quiet room, and it was a lot different between that and then going back into their other main part of the shop where there's a couch. It looked like, I guess, it was their shop. I'm not sure. But anyhow, it's an online video, and all you're wanting is to get the explanation anyhow. I mean, I don't mean to sound too critical of the video itself. It accomplished what it was supposed to be doing, explaining the trick and how it was done and how to make the gimmick, etc. And it is kind of a visual thing. There are other kinds of things that you can do with this. It's not something else that you have to carry around with you, so it's not like another packet trick or you have to worry about audience management, because it's something that can fit right on the box itself. You know, just slips inside the cellophane. It's clever the way that it was designed. So it's okay. Not something I would highly recommend, nor even necessarily recommend. It's average to a little below average, in my opinion. I'm not the wildest about it, but it's okay. If you're doing other kinds of tricks that involve tic-tacs or a miniature deck of playing cards, you might transition from that into this full deck of playing cards. So it makes sense in the context of a full routine. It's a quick and visual kind of a thing. So if you're looking for something, if you're walking up to the table, perhaps it's a good way of introducing yourself as being a magician, because it, in just an instant, it goes like that from one thing to something else. So if they're paying attention, or if they're not, this is going to certainly attract their attention. Again, that's called Tactical from worldmagic.co.uk and available from your favorite magic dealer by way of Murphy's Magic Supplies. Both the Full Monty and Tactical, as well as thousands of other products, are available from your favorite magic dealer. And as I mentioned earlier, that you can go to thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com, where they are now running a flash sale for 50% off. Plus, if you're a friend of the Magic Word, you even get a special free gift to boot. All of these come from Murphy's Magic Supplies. So thank you guys for listening to this review, and please patronize your favorite magic dealer. Well, I think that's pretty much of a wrap for this week. I want to again thank our guest, Sarah Ballantyne, and also thank Eric Citron for being a sponsor with thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com. And thank all of you also, the listeners, for tuning in week after week and listening to these conversations. If you really enjoy it, then show a little bit of love. All you need to do is to make a little donation, whether it's a one-time donation or you can be an ongoing sponsor. So this way you can pledge your support with any amount. Just think about having a cup of coffee with me each month and just sharing a few dollars each month that can be deducted from your credit card, just applied through patreon.com. Just go to themagicwordpodcast.com and learn how that you can become a friend of the Magic Word. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember that if you always do what you've always done, then you'll always get what you always got. This is Scotty out.